Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone. Wellness, inspiration, support.
Welcome to Rewiring Your Life. My name is Erica Spiegelman and my co-host here, Marcia Stone.
Hey, everybody.
My co-hostess. We are so excited today. We pride ourselves on having this podcast for support, for inspiration, and for community, and to, you know, share the work of really just inspiring people that are making, you know, changes to the world we live in and you know, leveling up towards health and wellness. And today we have on two amazing guests, Amanda Marino. She's a certified recovery and life coach. She's also a certified intervention professional. She holds a bachelor's of science in alternative medicine and works extensively with individuals who are hurting from low self-esteem, addiction, mental health, and emotional barriers. Amanda has openly shared that she's dealt with her own struggles with substance use disorder and body dysmorphia, and now dedicates her life to guiding individuals to grow, and believes that empowerment is, you know, what it's all about. We also have Blake Cohen. He's with us too. They are partners in a company that they have together called Next Level Recovery Associates. And Blake is a certified addictions professional. He also has a bachelor's degree in psychology and is fueled by passion, education, and his professional and personal experiences with substance use disorder. And he's a best-selling author, which is amazing, of a book called I Love You More, Short Stories of Addiction, Recovery, and Loss from Family's Perspective. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I wanted a drum roll, like, feels like,
yeah. I heard it.
Okay, good. I know. It was like, there they are. You know, the curtain opens. So welcome to the show, both of you. Can you tell us a little bit about your company and what the work focuses on and, you know, the connections you guys have created through addiction and self-esteem and all of that?
You go ahead, Blake. I'm usually the over-talker, so I'm just going to let you start.
Oh, man. I've never heard her refer to herself as the over-talker. I'm the over-talker. Next Level Recovery Associates was formed in really response to Amanda and I's experience working in the treatment field for substance use and mental health disorders. One thing that we noticed that so often was forgotten was the family piece. So what we wanted to do was really to get a more hands-on approach to help guide families through the entire process of their loved one getting help. So before, during, after treatment, we also want to be able to help support the person who's affected as well and help them understand that life can be beautiful if they find recovery and that there's so much potential and growth out there for them. But their family also has to do the work as well. So we want to help support them. We want to support the family. We want to really bring everyone together because we are big believers that love is the greatest motivating factor for somebody's recovery from a substance use disorder or mental health issue. So what we offer technically is concierge case management. So we look at the whole case and we have an amazing team of different professionals from all walks of life and backgrounds and education. And we assign professionals to a person's case. We work the case. We're very hands-on, very concierge, and really put together a plan for each individual family that meets their specific needs. We also offer interventions, so we can help motivate somebody to change and to go get the treatment that they need, and we can help support the family through that process. And we also offer what we call recovery associates, which is formerly known as a sober companion, but where we can send somebody to go live with somebody from anywhere from 24 hours and helping them get from point A to point B to spend extended periods of time with them and supporting them in their process of helping to get their recovery started or maintain it.
I'm just curious how long, so in terms of time, like anyone listening to this and there's like a family member or knows somebody that they would like help for. Like, I think a lot of people don't know what to do or how. Like, people always ask me, since I have a private practice and I counsel people with substance use issues, abuse issues, that they'll say to me, like, what's the appropriate amount of time someone should, you know, and I know it's an ongoing, I know sobriety is an ongoing you know, obviously process, but like how long does this usually take a family working with you? What's the typical amount of time?
I'll answer that. If a family can and has the ability, I think a year.
Okay.
Is the best amount of time. I mean, we work with people at, you know, at a 3 month, you know, commitment, 6 month commitment. But if they want it, like, you know, slowly titrating down off of services, but if a family wants to get it right and they have the, you know, the resources and the time and the bandwidth, if they want to do this and really have lasting change, I would love to see a year. We don't always see that. You know, we're able to see lasting change happen in 3 months and 6 months. However, if someone can give it a year, I think that, like, if you want to get it right, give the full, you know, slowly titrating down off services 1 year. Of course, it's different with every situation. I mean, we've had some clients, you know, that have struggled their whole life that have extended even far past the year, just like to still have that connection and because they felt comfortable with us and their accountability. But we don't want people to stay on, you know, forever. We want them to eventually feel empowered. And then we still stay in their lives. We check in regardless whether we're working with them or not anymore.
That's so good. This is Marcia. What I was going to say is it's interesting. I know that Amanda, you and Blake have been in the sort of in and around the treatment world for a long time, as have I, as has Erica actually too. But, you know, I was just thinking about when I first started working in treatment that, you know, 90 days was sort of, you know, seen as, you know, the go for it time period. Like you were just saying, now it's like a year. And I agree with you, by the way, and all the studies definitely back up and support, you know, what you were just saying. But in y'all's experience, I just find that I don't work in day-to-day treatment anymore, but at the end of my stay doing that, I just felt like the clients that were coming in were just so much more complex than they used to be, not only from sort of dual diagnosis and stuff like that, but different process addictions, you know, like, you know, more family involvement and more just really complicated family relationships. And I'm just curious if that has been y'all's experience too. And does that sort of, you know, feed into what you were just saying about the year-long process, Amanda?
I believe people are, you know, things are getting more complicated and families are more dysfunctional and there's so much more codependence and there's so many more failure to launch. And, you know, it is. And then you said the process addictions, that's one thing that we focus on and we work with heavily, as well as digital addiction, which is just now coming to the surface, but has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I think COVID really, and I hate to sound like a broken record because everybody is saying the same thing, right? But COVID has really opened up Pandora's box in terms of mental health issues. And we're seeing all sorts of new complex and interesting issues. I mean, I think Amanda and I recently have said more than we ever have before, like, well, this is new, when we get a call about a client and their issues and the family's issues. It's like we're entering new territory here and also finding out about different and new addictions that are really emerging in response to the social anxiety, the trauma that we've all experienced as a culture. You know, there's really interesting and new issues popping up now that have to be dealt with creative measures.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, because, you know, I work with a lot of families as well, and I know that a lot of, you know, a lot of the healing starts with empowering the families with, you know, educating them and empowering them with an understanding of boundaries and narratives and, you know, kind of getting them on board with a lot of things. But I've been getting clients recently that don't have very strong family relationships or, you know, parts of people, the family have passed away or moved away and they really don't have the family unit. But they do have close friends and they've built community in other ways. Do you guys encourage, I mean, I'm sure you encourage that, but do you see that often now also if the families aren't able to be involved?
Absolutely. And, you know,
Boyfriends, girlfriends, spouses, absolutely. Other people, you know? Yeah.
I mean, it's a family is, you know, often the times for a lot of people in recovery or a lot of people with, you know, different issues, family is what we create it, right? Because sometimes the biological family is extremely toxic, so family and whatever they create in their life. And so we're encouraging, you know, community in whatever sense, which is healthy. And then, you know, you as a private therapist, like we have found this clinical and coaching. So like being able to work on their underneath issues clinically and like see a psychiatrist, but also have the coaching and like the day to day, the life skills, the support, the forward motion, having that combination. And we help them, we walk them through like what community is like. So getting just like a plan on paper and actually walking through and implementing it and helping them find like, who are the healthy people in your life? Who is your community and developing your sense of family? I think I think a lot of people have to do that, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I do with my clients. I feel like I'm coaching half the time too for people that need that. You know, it depends on where they're at in their lives. And I think just also, you know, like obviously you guys do this too, but everyone has a different story. And I think when we talk about trauma, which I know you guys work a lot with people with trauma, I just wanted to kind of like, what are some common misconceptions people have about moving through trauma? Like, do they, you know, a lot of people are hesitant because they think, well, I haven't had enough trauma or I've had too much trauma. And, you know, it's kind of confusing because there's so many terms out there. Like I'll have someone call me and be like, should I do EMDR? I've heard about EMDR or I've heard about this brain tapping and, you know, but it, and then all, you know, it's like, there's so much out there. And I think a lot of people are confused in terms of addressing trauma. And I know that, you know, it's like, it's, I don't know if it's marketing that's going on these days that people are just, you know, really don't know what to do. And I think it's wonderful what you do is kind of help hold people. And it sounds like guide them and explain to them and be, you know, someone to kind of lean on for guidance, which, you know, they're fortunate to have you. But I think a lot of people don't have that. And it's a little bit confusing. Do you find that with this, with clients?
Yeah. Honestly, I'm confused sometimes with all the different types of traumas and different types of modalities and the way that people are using it. It confuses me sometimes. I think we're all experiencing that a little bit. That's like the new, it used to be everybody was individualized care. Now it's like everybody is trauma focused. Okay, so what does that mean?
Everyone used to be bipolar. Do you remember that? But now it's trauma.
Oh yeah.
Before,
these treatment centers.
Bipolar.
Yeah, I worked at a treatment center. I won't name what center, but every client would come into my office when I was on staff as a clinician there and say, "I was just diagnosed as bipolar," and I'm like, "You've been here one day. This is ridiculous." You know, it's like, yeah. Yes, I remember.
Yeah, I was bipolar because I was a drug addict. So I was showing signs, symptoms of somebody bipolar, but I was on a plethora of psych meds I never took as prescribed. I was on substances and up for days at a time. So yes, of course I displayed bipolar, but once I was stabilized and then I realized, no, I have addiction, you know?
Right.
So I think
right.
It's like that with trauma now. There are, and everyone does have different trauma. Like I compare my ex-husband had, you know, very like they would call small T's, like just different dysfunction in the family, like family not showing up to baseball games, overworking, being immigrants. I come from abuse and like kidnapping and things like that. But we were both affected the same way. It was just different levels of trauma and we both needed to heal differently. And I think that every person's journey of their healing through trauma is a continual journey. And it does spiral addiction and it is individual, right? So like there are like people can come and hear something and think, well, maybe I should try that. Maybe like go get assessed by a professional and see what they recommend.
Right, right, right. Once you've had some time away from substances and, you know, medications taken improperly, et cetera, I agree with what you all are saying. And it's really frustrating, you know, because once people sort of get assigned this, you know, label, this diagnosis. I mean, you know, sometimes part of the work once someone was finally getting into recovery was, you know, having them, you know, release that label, because sadly, a lot of the families that I would come in contact with, they would rather have a child that was literally mentally ill than, you know, than be considered an addict. And so a lot of that is sort of untangling all those, you know, old preconceived notions, et cetera, and, you know, what we lean into to get our identity. It's very complicated. And, you know, that's one thing I have to say this too. I know Amanda and Blake. I've known them for years. I've worked with them. And, you know, you guys are some of the only ones, frankly, that take the time to sort of unravel all those knots that we were just talking about, which is, in my estimation, you know, I mean, that to me is a non-negotiable that has to be done. But a lot of people just skip over it. And you guys don't. So thank you for taking that time.
Thank you. And people, Marsha, want immediate results. And this isn't the space for that, right? We want to help create, like I constantly say, you know, lasting change. I don't want you to have instant change and go back to the same thing in a few months. Like, that's not what I want. I've did that for years. I've seen multiple families go, we don't want that. And if that's what somebody wants is like instant gratification and nobody wants to do any work, like, we're just not the people. We'll tell them, you know, like, sorry, we're not the people. But thank you so much for saying that, Marsha. That means a lot.
Yeah, it really does mean a lot. I appreciate it. And I just want to go back to one thing really quick about the trauma piece is that for me, what the biggest surprise when I started diving in to learn more about trauma and how to treat it. And I think what the biggest surprise that people have is how trauma shows up. People expect to have like sort of what the movies portray of the PTSD response of a flashback memory of a guy coming home from war. Now he's suddenly back in the hole and, you know, there's bombs going off left and right. And the reality is trauma shows up in the most funky and weird and strange ways in our lives. Like even not being able to concentrate or in certain social anxieties and withdrawing from social situations, headaches. I mean, trauma can show up in so many different ways, and big trauma, little trauma, whatever it may be, has a really interesting neurological effect on our well-being and the way that we behave.
We can even channel it into like something positive, right? Like I found myself overdoing for 4 years and not emotionally feeling. Like I can even channel it into that. You know, we can channel our, and then all of a sudden be like, oh my God, what just happened? I completely emotionally detached for 4 years, focusing on goals and dreams, and was not even present to my emotions, right?
I mean, it's just so, it's so good for, yeah, it's, every individual has to kind of understand their own narratives. It's such an individualized thing. It's like, why do I respond, like when someone screams, why does that make me cry? You know, like that's probably a trigger. Maybe that happened in your past, but not, you know, maybe not everybody responds that same way. So it's like, it's just so important to have this be like an individualized process and for people to really get to know themselves and kind of, you know, obviously explore their past, explore their present, explore their choices that they've made and that are making in the present day. It's so much, you know, it's so multi-layered.
That's what it is. Like sitting with self is one of the hardest things I think for anyone, like sitting with the feelings, you know, and feeling through it, whatever it is a slow, painful, hard but yet growing journey, you know, and it is amazing how different things can trigger different things in people. And I think just being aware of yourself and being like in your skin and being present is like kind of like the ultimate goal, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a quick question for you guys. I think shows up a lot. Just really quick. I'm curious because you work with family so much. Enabling. You know, I had a coworker who started his own center, who I worked for him for many years. But he always tells me the story on his 16th time in treatment, he got it because his family kept on. Then I've heard, you know, through people that do interventions, you know, we can't enable certain behaviors, but, you know, so I'm curious if there's anyone listening, like, what do you usually tell people standard in terms of enabling? Like, should families be constantly asking their loved one, do you need help? Or should they step back and take care of themselves? Like, there's also a lot of information out there, I think, for families, and they are confused on, you know, I have also another client whose mother goes to meetings, support meetings for her recovery from his addiction, right? And they tell her, you know, to step back and let him grow and let him do his own things. But then again, there's some times where I'm like, you know, I think you should help him, you know, so, or ask him if he needs help. So again, what do you guys say to that? I know there's tons of people out there that are wondering.
Yeah, I think the answer is so complex, you know, it's because every situation is so different.
Yeah, I know it's a loaded question.
It isn't. You know, yeah. It's just every situation is so different and unique. And sometimes people do require a little bit of tough love to recognize the impact that they're having on their family what we typically tell families is to never blindly kick someone out of the house, for example. That's always the big one, right? Everyone's like, I'm going to kick him out of the house if he doesn't get help. We never say just to blindly do that. What you want to do is to be able to offer, in my opinion, offer the person an option. You're saying, look, I'm willing to support your recovery. I'm willing to send you to treatment. I will always be here to help you. But if you are not going to do that, there are certain boundaries that I have to put in place to protect myself and the rest of the family. So whether that means that, say, like, you can no longer live here, or we could set you up for 1 month in an apartment and that's all, you know, the rest is on you, you know, whatever it looks like for that family, I do think there has to be some firm delineation of like, okay, enough is enough. This dynamic has to shift. I can't let this keep going on any longer. I've had families fight with me on this too. And there was an event I was moderating once where I brought up the word enabling and it triggered a mother in the audience. Like, you know, I'd rather enable my son forever than kick him to the curb and know that he'll die on the street. I'd rather him at least use in my house where I have Narcan. You know, and my response is, and nothing against that person, but that's a very sick codependent relationship to have with somebody. And the reality is that you're allowing then your loved one to continue using in your own home. I can't imagine the guilt you would feel if something did happen to them and you know that you didn't try everything you possibly could to get them to go get some help.
And by time people come to us, oftentimes the enabling, the codependency, the very sick family dynamic has been going on so long that it like sometimes we have to like scream it. Like recently we had an older gentleman, you know, who family completely supported and funded everything as he completely just, you know, was wasted all the time. And it's like when you come into a full on, you know, adult that this has been happening for 50 years, like it's the impression you have to have on the older parents, like what you have to get into their heads is really hard because they've been doing this for a lifetime, right? So sometimes it's like, you know, and some people are willing to make the change. And when they do, they're actually seeing the individual start to commit and have some buy-in. But like there is a boundary for us with like that cutoff tough love, but there are boundaries and things you can put in place that can make a difference while still loving and being there for the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's what everybody really wants to do. It's just, you know, having the skill set or having the guidance to be able to do it, I think is, you know, even if you're super enabling, there's a part of you that thinks that this is what you need to do. So to bring in new information and a new way of looking at, you know, what they've done in the past is probably.
Yeah. And as a mother or a father, you want to fix, like I am a natural mama bear, you know, but when it comes to things with unhealthy behaviors, like, right. Like you have to learn or teach yourself a new way to best support them and to not fix.
The way I always look at it with families and the way I explain it to them usually is your behavior allowing the person's addiction to thrive and live on? Are you helping maintain their addiction by making this decision? And if the answer is yes, then that's enabling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm, gosh, I know so many people going through this right now. So this is very, very helpful. And, you know, just everybody that's listening that wants help, you know, we have you two, Next Level Recovery Associates, to kind of lean on to for help, because it's tough doing it alone. And like Marcia said too, without the kind of coping tools for themselves, it's impossible almost, you know.
Yeah, the devastation we hear in families, you know, voices that call us, because it's not their first rodeo, a lot of them, or sometimes it is, and they just have no experience. So say they either have no experience in addiction or they've been going through this forever. The desperation, I mean, it truly breaks my heart, and it's so complex, and people cannot, I've dealt with it in my own family, and I had to reach out for professional help. When I am emotionally invested as a professional and all I know, I cannot see or help the situation clearly, right? We did I had Blake do an intervention on my loved one because I had to be a participant because as a professional, because when I'm emotionally invested like that, my emotions take over. I need someone to tell me what to do and help me and support me. And that's what we try to do for people. It's so much to take on by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Good to, for everyone to know. Oh, thank you guys for sharing all this today.
We're obviously a little passionate.
Thank you for having
us. Fired up. So thank you.
No, that's me too.
No, it's
I
great.
I can go on and
You're
on.
Passionate.
I can go on and on. Yeah.
Yeah. So guys, where can our listeners find y'all?
We on all the socials. So Next Level Recovery Associates on all the socials. Amanda Marino on all the socials. Blake Cohen, same. And then our website is nextlevelra.com or nextlevelrecoveryassociates.com.
Yeah, we finally shortened it. We finally shortened it after that, telling people that here's our website. It was like a book, you know, or here's our email. So we shortened it to ra.com to make things easier. Writing that down was a lot. But yeah, we're very active on social media. So like I'm very active on LinkedIn. We're very active on Instagram. You know, we try to put out things to help people and, you know, even just, you know, things that just support and also resources. And like, that's the thing we do. We also provide on our website, we have a link of like free resources and books and website and support groups and, you know, videos and everything just for families. So we have a resource page as well that like we provide with to every family or anyone that even reaches out to us.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you guys so much for your amazing contribution and work.
And thank you both for all that you do. It's so
thank
nice
you
to meet
guys.
Erica and Marcia. You know, you mean so much to me, and thank you so much for having us on today.
We ask our guest kind of a deep dive last question, and just answer whatever comes to the top of your head. Amanda, what is your superpower?
My superpower is I am able to throw a crazy, wild idea against the wall and make it work.
Awesome.
With no like rhyme, reason, structure, planning, I'm just able to make things happen, and I'm pretty resilient.
That's amazing. I love that.
That's the first thought.
Okay, that's good. And Blake, what is your superpower?
I can fly.
That is the first time we've heard that.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I would say, I guess the first thing that came to mind, I guess, would be a sense of humor and laughing through hard times and being able to turn awkward situations into something that's memorable and enjoyable and try to have some fun with some of the wild things that go on in our lives.
He keeps me laughing on a regular. He keeps, if you watch some of his videos, you will cry. He keeps me laughing. He's like a brother to me. He's the brother. I say he's the brother I wish I never had. And he keeps me laughing, which I need desperately in the work we do.
That's great. My grandfather always would say, you have to have a sense of humor in life, always, and laugh at yourself and laugh at the, and he lived till, you know, 96 years old. So I think that there's a lot to that. Yeah.
Go watch Blake's Mrs. Doubtfire video on Instagram of him running around his backyard like a maniac. I'm telling you, I watched it 100 times and I cried. I was sitting on my couch alone watching it on repeat. It's hysterical. He's very funny.
All right. I'm going to do that this afternoon. Thank you for that. Thanks again, you guys. And to all our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to Rewiring Your Life. And until next time, be well.